Information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Hello to all of my friends. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. Please don't be worried about the laryngitis in my voice. I'm one of those terrible protesters that blocks your traffic. And we were back to back at the Hands Off Venezuela and the No to the Joint Terrorism Task Force rallies in downtown by City Hall and the Federal Building. So I scream my lungs out every time. So I'm lucky enough to be in studio with Candy.
Hey, everyone. My name is Candy Luisa Herrera.
Thank you very much for being here. Mm-hmm. And Russell.
Hi, folks. Russell Lum.
And we're going to talk about Hands Off Venezuela, the action today mm-hmm. in Portland. But beyond that, what it means to say Hands Off Venezuela, period. What are we getting at? Why are we saying it? And what do we want? So if we can start by bringing in some history and some significance, how did we get to this point that people are even considering intervention in Venezuela? What happened?
So this has been a threat to Venezuela for many years now. In 2002, very famously, there was the coup that where they essentially kidnapped President Chavez. And I think he was gone for 2-3 days, and so many people rallied that they had to bring him back. In those 2 days, I think Bush sent his ambassador. There was a really bougie party. I mean, they were celebrating for those, 48 hours. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But then the people rebelled and they brought him back. So that was the last time that they were able to do anything like that. There have been certainly a number of attempts since Capriles was last guy. Now we have Guaido, mm-hmm. self-declared president of Venezuela, which I find remarkable. Mm-hmm. So there have been numerous threats to Venezuela and the Bolivarian Revolution. So, Russ?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how we got here is the very long story of U.S. privilege and imperial domination in the region. Mm-hmm. Venezuela in the 20 years since Chavez bucked some of these trends have put Venezuela in the sights, in the targets of Western imperial powers, of the oligarchic forces within Venezuela to take it back. So we have seen that just as Candy was talking about in 2002 and in different flare-ups as things have gone along, and in a constant undermining economically as things have gone along. And so here we are just last month dealing with it getting very hot again, mm-hmm. and now dealing with competing claims about who's running Venezuela and yeah. and who's using the word democracy as regards Venezuela mm-hmm. Authentically or genuinely.
Well, Candy, I just want you to give some background when you talk about the Bolivarian Revolution. Can you say for people that may not know what that means?
Sure. So the Bolivarian Revolution is a reference to Simon Bolivar, which mm-hmm. was, basically Latin American George Washington, and so, they very much see the Venezuelan Socialist Project as a continuation of that, mm-hmm. of independence, mm-hmm. really, from an occupying power. And so, and they've been irrespective of what you've been hearing on U.S. media, they have been successful in a number of ways. Mm-hmm. Even, you know, by the CIA standards. So they put out a surprisingly honest publication where they even said themselves, social investment in Venezuela during the Chavez administration reduced poverty from nearly 50% in 1999 to about 27% in 2011, increased school enrollment, substantially decreased infant and child mortality, and improved access to potable water and sanitation through social investment. So even by CIA standards, in terms of raising the living standards of poor people in Venezuela, the Bolivarian Revolution has been successful to a great degree.
Depending on which side you're on.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah, if you're a rich person in Venezuela, you know, it might be difficult to get toilet paper once in a while. You know, they're angry they can't get their, you know, Chanel probably isn't open as many hours as they were before. You know, I think most folks who listen to KBOO don't identify necessarily with that class. And so I think that you, you know, I'm speaking as someone of the left, I'm speaking as a socialist. And so I do identify with that class. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I feel like you can only gauge the success of a nation based on how they treat their the
most vulnerable.
Most vulnerable. I'm trying to remember what how James Baldwin, most wretched of the earth.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So how do you treat the most wretched of the earth? And it looks like under the Bolivarian Revolution they made I said, substantial gains.
Any notes on the Bolivarian Revolution that you wanna bring in?
Well, I think since we're coming at this in broad strokes and still coming at this in background information, I think it's important to acknowledge that Chavez really was the anchor of a pink tide, that Chavez was the anchor of a whole series of governments.
What's pink tide?
That is a phenomenon which I think, like, looking at the historical record, we could say is past now. Mm-hmm. But that is a phenomenon of a series of South American and Central American governments on democratic means electing folks who were going to turn away from the so-called Washington Consensus, that were going to turn away from the corporate-driven and Western imperial interest-driven economic impositions on those economies. So governments started becoming more left, Chavez being the best example. And the Bolivarian word being applied to the alliance of countries that Chavez founded to kind of stand against the governments in Latin America that were aligned with Washington's interests, that were obeying, say, mm-hmm. The decades-old norm of accepting free trade agreements, of accepting so-called cross-border investment, of accepting privatization and deregulation, the neoliberal story. So the Bolivarian Revolution was a reaction to the harms of the neoliberal story and was trying to build something different and build something people-driven instead of internationalist, capital-monger driven. Mm. And they're, like we're seeing, they're taking it back.
So what about the claim that Maduro is a dictator?
Mm-hmm.
The assertion that Maduro is a dictator. What's the answer to that?
I mean, that's just nonsense. It's just U.S. propaganda. I mean, he was democratically elected, not by as much of a margin as the first time. But I mean, that's, you know, even, I mean, this is often cited, but Carter described Venezuelan elections as the most open, free election system in the world. And not only that,
who's Carter?
Oh, I'm sorry, former President Carter. Yeah, thank you.
Of the Carter Center, which monitors such things.
Thank you.
I mean, Jimmy Carter, first of all, having had the experience of being president, and second of all, being a really vocal former president. But thirdly, there's an institute that bears his name that is under some, you know, conventional understandings, the Carter Center is, but nonetheless, basically puts their stamp of approval on the way that Venezuela goes about elections.
I want to be sure that people understand that while there are questionable elections that happen throughout the world.
Mm-hmm.
By their standards and or international standards. You know, there are many people that look at our electoral college and say, that's a little suspect.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Well,
no one's invading the U.S. and installing a new president. But that's another story.
I think that's worth talking about.
I think
by any reasonable measure of humanitarian crisis, by any reasonable measure of systemic human rights abuse,
mm-hmm.
If there were a police officer of the world, far and, you know, ahead and above the United States would be subject to questions about whether their leader is legitimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There would be a question of whether
how is it that you don't get the popular vote and yet you win?
Mm-hmm.
I always make that point. I'm like, there have been two times in my life where we've had a president who lost the popular vote but still became president. And I'm not old. I'm 33. So I always...
You look good, girl.
Thank you. It's a lot of moisturizer. But I always say that to folks who seem to... They have such strong feelings about Venezuela. It's like, well, have you ever taken a look at the system here?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just brought that up to illuminate the point that when... countries that have less than democratic values and less than true elections have those less than true elections, if they've been playing nicely with the U.S., they can count on our support or at the very least our non-intervention. But by the highest standards of people around the globe watching the Venezuelan elections, they say that they were fair and just.
Mm-hmm.
So the assertion that Maduro is a dictator is an important one to tackle because it gets repeated without question.
Mm-hmm.
So right. I wanted to bring it out before we even begin to talk about some of the politics today.
Mm. Yeah.
That the problems with Maduro are true. You know, that he's not perfect by any means.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
He's also not a dictator, though.
No,
so we should
not.
Be able to be honest with our critiques and then be able to reject people who would malign him on a basis that is infactual.
Yeah, I mean, there's... I think it's safe to say we're all socialists here. But, you know, there's... It's one thing to say, to have an internal critique, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's another thing to just kind of believe the narrative pushed out by U.S. media. But, you know, essentially the thrust of the rally that we had just a couple hours ago is that, you know, it's really not our place to say. It's for the Venezuelans.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's for the Venezuelans to figure out. And it's like, who the hell are we to sit here in the United States or any other country to tell them what to do?
That's right. I mean, Maduro won his first election, won just this last time around, although the opposition played the boycott card, in what the international community considers to be fair elections. And so you're correct. It's not a dictatorship, and also correct. And I think this is one of the most kind of low-hanging fruits if we're going to talk about the flaws of U.S. approach to the U.S. approach against Venezuela. One of the low-hanging fruits is to talk about the authoritarians around the world who get a pass from this kind of scrutiny, from this kind of undermining. I mean, there is a literal coup government in Honduras that is illegitimate, that is in force, thanks to the support that it got from the United States to establish the coup and since. And, I mean, the United States holds hands with a monarchy on the Arabian Peninsula, that being, you know, Bin Salman's government. In Saudi Arabia, I mean, on and on. You can talk about the dictator type qualities of Rodrigo Duterte.
An actual monarch, a king.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's right. Yep. That's how they do it. I mean, talk about the rising authoritarianism of, in one case, Nicaragua, which some White House officials have been talking about a lot lately, and in the other case, Venezuela. It is cherry picking. It serves an ideology that has failed. The Bolivarian Revolution being a reaction to that failure, And it's taking us back into this Cold War cycle that a lot of us see through. That's mm-hmm. why the Portland community sees through it. Mm-hmm. That's why there's organizing going on about it. That's why we had a rally and found that to be successful. And that's why
a rally in the freezing rain.
Yeah,
that's right.
On that. The cusp on a snow
apocalypse.
Snow apocalypse for the Pacific Northwest.
And people came out, almost 100 people. Mm-hmm. And on short notice, mm-hmm. so we're doing all right, mm-hmm. but we must do better.
We've got a world to win.
So I hope that y'all can encourage people to get involved and continue to be able to push back against what we would say is imperialist propaganda.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm absolutely committed, especially now that we have, kind of an ad hoc coalition going. We signed up a bunch of people at the rally, so hopefully we can, in the future, make that bigger. But, I personally know I tried a couple weeks ago, mm-hmm. And I didn't, me personally, I didn't get much of a response. And then somebody else put out a call. Actually, Russell did. Yeah.
Candy, tell that story a little bit farther back. We had... the Venezuelan, now by naturalization and expert on Venezuela, and politics instructor and scholar, mm-hmm. Steve Elner,
yes.
come to Portland, and a whole bunch of Portland members of the Portland public and Portland activists were in the room, mm-hmm. To hear that perspective, mm-hmm. And to hear what it's like on the ground from what Steve has a left perspective. And told a lot of the merits of the Chavez and Maduro programs, mm-hmm. and the threats, which mm-hmm. which partly we know, mm-hmm. and partly we don't see on the ground the effect, nor do we see on the ground from the U.S. side what the 1% of Venezuela really does.
Why would we?
Right.
Who's reporting on them?
No, exactly. So to fast forward here, in the wake of hearing from Steve Elner, this Portland community was like, are we going to meet? How are we going to provide solidarity to a people that's under threat? Mm-hmm. And so ain't nobody replied to Candy's outreach.
To my damn email.
I'm sorry.
I know. That's all right. We got it going. It doesn't matter. Okay. It's in the past. Mm-hmm. Okay. We had a great, I think that was a great turnout.
Yeah.
And I was cold.
Yeah.
Y'all, I am a Latin person from Florida. This is too cold for me.
I understand. I'm sorry.
And I was there early. I just mm-hmm. want credit. That's all.
Okay. We're going to make sure you get it.
Okay.
Well, thank you for bringing that. And I want to, if we can, I want to bring in the financial interests mm-hmm. that the Venezuelan media has. I want to talk about the racism
absolutely.
That gets deployed against Chavistas, against people who support the revolution in Venezuela. That there is a racial component here that cannot be ignored.
Absolutely.
I just spoke about it with Rachel on Bread and Roses, the program just before this one, where we talked about Chavez being depicted as a monkey by mm-hmm. by the media, that people regularly get targeted because they're indigenous, because they're of African descent. And it's so interesting to me, if you look at the rallies and you look at who's for and who's against, the actual color of the crowd, like when there are thousands of people and they mm-hmm. pan out,
yep.
it's actually like black and white. And I don't think that should ever be ignored, that there's a racial justice component here that often gets invisibilized by U.S. media, because, I mean, if the story about Latin America is that there is one Latin America, that there's, there's one ethnicity called Latino, then you would actually miss the fact that indigenous and Afro-descendant people mm-hmm. Are oppressed in Latin America in some very similar ways to what indigenous people and black people in the U.S. experience. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I just wanted to bring that in.
Yeah, yeah. The slave diaspora was actually larger in Latin America than it was in the United States. And so, yeah, you're absolutely right. If you look at the crowds who are attending these pro-government rallies, they are black and mixed. And so I think, what was the last, the census, the last, the 2014 census that was taken, it was 44% of the people in Venezuela identified as white. And if you compare that to the 60% of people who identify socialist, I mean, it's pretty telling, right?
Hmm.
Lines up pretty close.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, it is absolutely, you know, what might, it's a class war for sure, but it's also a race war because you absolutely cannot ignore that fact.
Yeah. The struggle against colonization, the struggle against white supremacy, and the struggle against capitalism are much more clearly articulated and intertwined in Latin America, particularly Venezuela, compared to the U.S., where a lot of those movements are able to be successfully fractured from one another, and that's not one person or one group's fault, but that it's so stark in Venezuela is something that I think should not be ignored, and it is being ignored.
Absolutely, and even, I mean, there's no group who are more self-critical than the left, but even the crap that you read in Jacobin, for instance, I think that if more people who consider themselves, you know, white allies on the left understood that fact, I think they would definitely reevaluate their position on Venezuela.
Well, let's hope so.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. That's,
I think a lot of them don't know that.
Point. Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people don't know how many black people are in Latin America. You know, Brazil is majority black.
Mm-hmm.
People don't know that.
Yeah. Dominican Republic.
Absolutely.
Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. Cuba. Panama. It's just, you know, to name a few, you know, countries that have like substantial black populations that like far surpass the 13% in the United States.
Absolutely. And people think of these, you know, these countries, and you, people think of Brazil, they think of like, you know, light skinned Brazilian model.
That's a, that, yeah.
You know, and it's so far from the reality of what Brazilians look
they're,
like.
They're European. Mm-hmm. And like they're a lot of the most famous, you know, beauties of Latin America. I mean, they, their ancestry doesn't even go back as far as colonization, you know, by Spain and Portugal.
Yeah.
In the Brazilian example, you know, they were colonized by Portugal and not Spain. But their ancestry actually goes back to Germany in the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
So you fill in those blanks.
Well, in recent elections in South America, have put into office people who are openly hostile to the Afro communities, to the indigenous communities.
Yeah, Bolsonaro.
Bolsonaro in Brazil is basically just getting greedy here and trying to undo indigenous protections, undo indigenous categories.
And for that, you get pneumonia. Apparently, Bolsonaro is in the hospital right now with a pretty bad case of pneumonia. Yeah.
I just want to say,
Comrade Pneumonia.
Comrade Pneumonia, solidarity for Comrade Pneumonia.
Yes, and to finish the thought, the Duque election in Colombia, the Afro community considers that a totally hostile environment.
Mm-hmm.
And the campesino community, the rural folks, and the activists and the left. In a sense, all got put on the ropes by this trend. This trend, which is kind of whipping back at the pink tide, and now kind of in its own Trump moment of electing authoritarian governments right wing authoritarian governments that still use the word democracy and still point the finger at the left and wagging the finger and saying, "Hey, you're not democratic."
Yeah. Glenn Ford, whose article in the Black Agenda Report Rachel and I just read on Bread and Roses, regularly refers to the U.S. as a capitalist dictatorship.
Mm-hmm.
Because despite the fact that most people in the U.S. are struggling to meet their basic needs, housing, food, clothing, transportation, education, there is no recourse. There is only more austerity and policing for you. Mm-hmm. Austerity meaning like cutting of public benefits and public goods.
Right. Yep.
And usually to pay for debts that you didn't create, right? It's because of speculation bubbles, you know, that the economy tanks. It's never because of people on public assistance. But they'll have you think that it is, of course. So despite the fact that that can be true about most people in this country, and yet there's no change, it says something about the nature of our democracy. The interests of the rich will continue to be prioritized over you. And what are you going to do about it? There's nothing you can do about it.
What are you talking about? You can vote. How dare you?
Thank you. Oh, I'm so naive. I'm sorry. Okay. So I think we've done a pretty good job of laying out the sort of how we got here. Did we miss anything before I talk about where we're at now?
The capitalist interests. Why? Oh, okay. Well, I mean,
you want to talk about oil?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's no secret that Venezuela has the largest oil reserves in the world.
Yeah.
And John Bolton was pretty bold about it.
That's right.
Guaido even said the first thing you do is privatize is the oil system.
Yeah.
So, you know, even by U.S. standards, they are pretty bold in their assertion. This is the reason why we're going. And they'll color it and they'll paint it and talk about democracy like the United States gives a crap.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that makes me so angry, and why I'm personally so committed to advocating on behalf of Venezuelans in Venezuela, is because people in this country, for the most part, don't give a crap about Latin America. And what, now we care about Venezuela? Most white folks don't care. Most people in this country do not give a crap about Latin America. But what? Every morning, okay, this is what I do. Every morning I wake up, I piss excellence, right? Everybody here at this table does that. Then I get a cup of coffee and I put on NPR on my phone, right? And I have to, for the last week, 2 weeks or so, two or three stories every single morning about Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
As if anybody in this country gives a crap about Latin America.
Mm.
But they're inundated with these messages of dictatorship and oppression and all this nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what makes me the most angry. And it's just, it takes me back to, I went to grad school for Latin American studies in Florida, right? Ground zero for like these, I'm from South Florida, so it was ground zero for all these Cuban expats and
like neocons.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so I had to go to grad school with these people.
They love Batista.
Oh my God.
So bear that in mind. Champion of democracy and progressivism.
So I had to go grad school with these people. Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And so there was always the same argument about Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And it aligns so perfectly with Venezuela. And the first thing that they would say is, look how the Cuban Revolution has treated black people, right? And this is coming from, I've had this conversation so many times, this is coming from people who don't give a crap about black people.
Yeah.
I've never seen their stupid Cuban faces at any of these BLM rallies. Like, I never saw their faces at a Trayvon Martin. There were a million Trayvon Martin protests in Florida after that happened.
Oh, yeah, the big one in Sanford kicked off the Black Lives Matter movement.
Were you there?
I was there.
Oh.
Yeah, hey.
High five.
Do you remember when Jesse Jackson mispronounced Trayvon's name? He said Trayon.
Oh, man.
And someone had to tap him on the shoulder and say, it's Trayvon, Reverend.
Oh, yikes. No, I actually wasn't at the Sanford one. We did one locally in Gainesville is where I was.
Thank you.
Yeah. So
I love Gainesville.
Have you worn that?
Too? Yeah. Yeah. That's where I met Cornel West.
Oh.
Because yeah, a move to amend was really, really big in Gainesville in 2012 when I lived in Florida.
That's so funny. I wonder if we crossed paths.
I'm sure.
Didn't even know.
The left is tiny.
Okay. Unfortunately, the United States.
For now.
Yeah. For now. Exactly.
DSA is 55,000 strong and growing.
There we go.
So we'll see what we can do with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, hopefully we can actually push it to the left. And we can do this through these pro-Venezuela events.
I think.
I think the folks don't understand, for folks who identify as socialists and communists, how important it is to speak up on behalf of Venezuela. And, you know, because what it is about really revolutionary internationalism, right? And so I don't think, and this is a critique of National, that we don't do a good job of actually of talking about actual existing socialism, right? We keep it to theory, right? We read Marx. We have these Marxist study groups and stuff like that, which is fine. Like, everybody needs that background. But I don't see
the right studies Marx, we better.
Right.
Okay.
But it's like, if you understand socialism, you have to understand the importance of revolutionary internationalism. And so as a result of that, you have to support the socialist project in Venezuela, because that's what socialism is. It is about internationalism, and it is about supporting everybody in a universal clause, you know. Why did we start talking about that? Oh, I was going on about Cubans.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, that was my point, is that, you know, the first thing that Cubans will point to when you, God forbid, mention Fidel is, what about black people? But these are often the people who don't give a crap about black folks here, for sure. And then same thing with Venezuela. It's like you hear somebody criticizing Venezuela and using all, you know, oppression and all this nonsense. It's like, okay, great. What have you done for the rest of Latin America? Or even the Latins here, Latinx people here.
And it's very important to note that many of the expatriates that you're talking about in Florida that complain about the revolution, that it supported Batista, whether intentionally or sort of tacitly through supporting business as usual.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yes, status quo.
That they come from, and we should be honest about this, they come from the slave-owning class.
Absolutely.
So, that's where their family got their money. They got their money in slave trading and sugar and coffee, plantations.
That's right.
Bananas.
And you'll see that with Cuban expats here. That's why it was so hard to, I kept making a joke with the email, with our communications in the group. It's like, are you, somebody claimed that they knew a good Venezuelan. And I'm like, are you sure?
Yeah.
Because I haven't found one.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, the same thing with Cuba. I mean, one of the first things that the Cuban Revolution did was desegregate all public spaces. And so it wasn't initially, when the revolution happened, that you had this mass exodus of Cubans. It was the moment when white Cubans, self-identified white Cubans, realized that their kids are going to have to go to school with Afro-Cubans. And that's when they said, we're getting the hell out of here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's mm-hmm. the first wave.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll see that same kind of thinking with Venezuelans here in the United States.
Mm.
You know.
That's stark.
Okay, so that's the background. And thank you for bringing up the oil interests.
Mm-hmm.
I think that this is, in addition to some of the racial tensions, the racial dynamics that exist in Venezuela and in Latin America, that we should also talk about natural resources. This is the primary driver for a lot of what we would call like the colonial project globally, mm-hmm. is for resource extraction. It's not lost on me, and it shouldn't be lost on anyone else, that the reason that the working class and the poor in Venezuela were able to get any gains at all was always in spite of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
and its interest. It was because Venezuela was able to position itself geostrategically and in the international community, that they were able to sell their oil and then use that money to pay for social programs for people throughout the country. And it was always the project of imperial powers to undermine that, because if you undermine Venezuela's ability to sell their oil, or any colonized or former colonized place in the world to sell their natural resources, whatever they are, well, then you've got to contend with them on a more equal footing. You have to respect them the way that you would respect a white country, which is, you know, just the biggest slap in the face that a white supremacist could ever experience.
Right.
I have to respect brown people? How dare you say that to me? But that they were able to maneuver so that now Venezuela is not able to sell on the global market like they should. They still got it. Why? The world wants it, no doubt. You know, these are the same people that are denying climate change or that humans cause it. So that they're not able to maneuver in the world and sell their natural resources. That is what is crippling their economy. It's got nothing to do with the social programs themselves or the socialist project that they're engaging with, but it's their inability to make the money needed to participate in global capitalism, really, that makes it so that they're not able to have the money that they need to get toilet paper on the shelves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Chavez was able to pursue a number, the Bolivarian Revolution was able to pursue a number of social projects, and they spent left and right, you know, when oil prices were high. And then when oil prices tank, they lost like immediate, like 30% of their GDP, which was enormous. And so, you know, kind of an internal criticism of the Bolivarian Revolution in Venezuela was, you know, that they didn't diversify their economy.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. But, you know, Venezuela doesn't exist in a bubble, right? You have to take into consideration a number of things, including the sanctions that you mentioned, and their inability to continue to sell their oil.
On the global market.
Mm-hmm. And especially, you know, I think what you said is this, the terrible offense of having to negotiate, you know, with these brown leaders of countries. I mean, Maduro is a bus driver, union bus driver, which I find absolutely remarkable. I mean, I can't imagine somebody in the United States running for president who was a bus driver.
Yeah.
You know?
Let's encourage bus drivers to run.
Absolutely.
I'm going to get in touch with ATU, the Amalgamated Transit Union, Shirley Block is the president. Shout out Shirley Block.
Shirley Block for president.
Okay.
2020.
That escalated quickly.
Shirley, you've just been voluntold. You're going to run
for
president.
She's a black woman now from Portland, Oregon. Let's go, Shirley.
Yeah. So, Venezuela doesn't exist in a bubble. You have to take into consideration a number of things. One of them being, most importantly, of course, sanctions, which is something that Cuba has struggled for how long? You know, how many generations?
Mm-hmm. Under sanctions.
Under sanctions.
And embargo.
Under embargo, yeah.
It's very important.
And so, you know, another thing is they're not able to remit any of the profit that they make in the United States. You know, Citgo is a Venezuelan owned firm, and they can't remit any of the money that they make.
Yeah, it's $70 billion that just went to the other side.
Right, though, yeah.
So that's where that money is.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing is that, and this is so consistent, this is why they keep doing this crap about, you know, being self-declared president, stuff like that, because they don't have the popular support to actually run somebody.
Oh, and they won't get it.
Well, and they won't get it, yeah,
and,
absolutely.
Yeah, and what's a clearer evidence of that than boycotting Maduro's reelection? And then to accept the helping hand of U.S. and other international interests, I mean, it is shocking. I mean, it's a little bit in the public mind in the United States now to be like, oh, anti-meddling, you know? Another country shouldn't mess with your apparently democratic or so-called democratic or aspirationally democratic process. Mm-hmm. Yeah, people don't like meddling. Mm-hmm. Well, they sure as hell should not support an opposition that can't win in the arena of democracy and is going out with their handout for foreign meddling, which of course, because they'll serve the oligarchic class, that international community is very happy to provide that hand up and all the money that it entails.
Yeah, I think, but I, you know, maybe it's just me being cynical. I said on Facebook the other day. I got, we had a resolution at the rally, and one of the signers on was the Southwest Washington Central Labor Council.
Congrats on that, by the
way.
Yeah,
I know, right? So I was surprised myself. Yeah. So when I bought it there, I thought, I was like, for sure there's going to be, let's just say, robust debate about Venezuela. And it nobody said anything.
Oh,
actually,
great.
People clapped.
Okay.
And great. I'm like, we're, and again, I don't know if it was just my emotional baggage from Florida and having to deal with all those awful people. But, you know, I was really shocked, and I don't know if it's because there is a, what do you call it, a tide change in the United States where people really
so
are
sick.
So, well, or...
Yeah, pink tide change.
Yeah.
Come on, sorry.
I don't know if
I,
it's
I
folks...
I can't resist puns. It's terrible.
Clearly, but, you know... If
yeah, let's wear our colors on that one. Let's, yeah.
But I don't know if it's because of, you know, folks like Bernie and Ocasio-Cortez, AOC, if that has really triggered a chai change in the United States, or it's just because, you know, the anti-war movement is getting a boost because there's a Republican in office. I don't know because I don't have the life experience to know that.
Okay.
So I don't know.
Also, generally, people are just less trusting of the military generally mm-hmm. and what they do in other parts of the world. And it's difficult to be able to take that temperature because there are exactly zero anti-war and anti-interventionists that are invited on to pick your favorite affiliate of a corporate-sponsored media empire, you know, mm-hmm. no mm-hmm. ABC affiliate, NBC, CBS yeah. affiliate will have on anyone who is talking about world peace and about non-intervention
That's
and about
right.
diplomacy. They're not invited. Mm-mm. They won't be there. You won't hear those messages. So we cannot even know really what the mood is for anti-war or where people are at in terms of how they feel about the U.S. military and whether or not they believe the lie that they're there to keep us safe. All we know is that we hear it droned on every single time the U.S. military is even mentioned. They use the language of serving, protecting,
humanitarian intervention.
I mean, mm-hmm. but I think less and less people believe that. It's hard to keep telling that lie when people who are non-aggressors are dying. People find out. People know. How is it that the U.S. is killing people abroad and there's no retribution? There are no Americans that are being killed by other governments here. There are no invaders in the United States. And I think on a basic level, people do that math in their head. How is it that we're all over the world mm-hmm. and we're asserting that these people are threats and there's no threat here?
I think that's absolutely right. And I think often, do this test, this is what I like to do. First of all, when people talk about Venezuela and they bring up oppression or dictatorship, or whatever, I'll ask them, what's the capital of Venezuela? Who's the vice president of Venezuela? Mm-hmm. And most of the time, they cannot tell me. Mm-hmm. And next time, you know, every time we're talking about invading a country, it's like, okay, great. Why don't you point it out on a map for me? Mm-hmm. You know? And they often can't. That doesn't go without saying.
Thank you.
Well, and I think further to Alyssa's point, yeah, there is no invasion of this country. Still, the United States and the presidency of Donald Trump calls it an invasion because they're always there. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And there always has to be a scapegoat. There always has to be a boogeyman. There always has to be an underclass. And, you know, I liked the commentary which said, you know, if this Guaido coup goes through, it will create a crisis for the United States on the other side. You know, it will create the extractive industry. It will create the corporate giveaways mm-hmm. that torch Venezuela, that cause migration north. And the United States is going to doubly or triply victimize those Venezuelans who seek refuge from the corporate domination of their country. This, you know, it's the Donald Trump model. to create a crisis and then point the finger at the person who shows up in need due to the crisis. So this is happening again, unless we stop it.
I hope we can stop it. I really hope we can stop it. As you were saying that, I was thinking about the Muslim ban. Mm-hmm. The seven countries who were most devastated by U.S. intervention and war are the seven countries who we will not accept refugees from if Trump had his way. And thank God people showed up to airports all around the country, started by JFK, mm-hmm. Terminal 4. I'll never forget that night. It was incredible when we found out that there was an injunction and there were lawyers who were losing their minds trying to make sure that they are able to try to make an intervention. And that paired with the enormous protest that was immediate, where people went to airports in solidarity to shut down airports. And if we're not letting in refugees into airports, no one's landing. No one's going to be traveling mm-hmm. on planes. And yep. that was exactly what we needed. And I pray every day for more resistance that looks like that, that actually shuts down business as usual. Mm-hmm. I hope we can do that for Venezuela and for a number of other things as well. The yep. struggle. That's You're it. Listening to The Struggle on KBOO Radio 90.7 FM. So if we can talk about the action from today. Mm-hmm. You spoke a little bit about it when you went to the Southwest Washington Labor Council. Mm-hmm. But can y'all talk about the organizing that went into it, please?
Yeah. So when we on the receiving end of the urgent news that there's competing claims to the presidency, that there's this new kind of out front overt coup going on in Venezuela. Like so many communities, we said, how can we resist this from where we are? How can we bear our maximum possible impact from where we are? Portland, Oregon has a lot of people who see through the lies, who know that mainstream media doesn't tell the truth on this. So we wanted to find those people. And we've got a lot of old hands at organizing that came together to plan something. And it turns out we've created a new organization. It's still being birthed. But we're pleased that there is this thing called Hands Off Venezuela, PDX. Important to bring our kind of our best front to that and to pull off a rally and more. We look forward to more. Candy and I were in that from the start. And as we mentioned, trying to talk about Venezuela going back months now, the Trump administration sanctions have only, escalated over the last years. So it is high time. And in Portland, we're taking action. We're not the capital city. We don't have as much access as other ways of approaching our federal government. Right. But there's a couple federal government buildings in town, and we shouted up one of them today.
It's right across the street from City Hall.
That's it.
Anyone can demonstrate. You don't have to wait for something to be called. Everyone can be an organizer. Mm-hmm. If you have a network of friends and you're all angry about this, y'all can go demonstrate at the federal building. Mm-hmm. Just putting that out there. So, Candy, if you can talk a little bit more about what the process was like for organizing today's rally, please.
Sure. Like I said, it's kind of an ad hoc committee. I didn't know, I think, most of the folks who are now in our group. We met once. We kind of tried to figure out, who the target was, who the speakers were going to be. Just want to give a quick shout out. Thank you so much for Daniel Shea from Vets for Peace for speaking today. Dagoberto Flores from Portland Central America Solidarity Committee. Joshua Hanks.
Big shout out.
Joshua Hanks from Workers' World Party. And then Sam Miller from the International League of People's Struggle in Portland. So we had them line up, and then I also want to give a quick shout out to all the folks who signed a resolution. So very quickly, I think we got this done like within 24 hours. We got a revolution. Yeah, we're working toward it.
From your mouth to God.
We had a resolution typed up, and so quick shout out, Vets for Peace, of course, for signing it. Excuse me, Portland DSA, like I said, my CLC in Southwest Washington, Portland Jobs for Justice. Jobs with Justice.
Common mistake. I don't know what that is.
I don't know either.
Okay.
It's like IWW. Like people keep saying International Workers of the World's Industrial.
Okay. Well, that too.
Yeah, I know.
But that's
why.
Not what the acronym is.
Yeah.
Okay. And shout out to IWW. Did they sign on?
They didn't sign on. I don't think anybody reached out to them. See, we had
big mistake.
It was a quick turnaround.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sure they signed it.
Yeah, we'll get it.
Yeah, we'll get it next time. So Icebreakers signed on, Workers World Party Portland, of course, Occupy ICE Portland, Jewish Voice for Peace, and then the Oregon Fair Trade Campaign.
Great.
So shout out to those folks for signing on.
One of them is sitting next to me.
That's right. That's right. Repping the work that still goes on to fight the big bad free trade agreements.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, like I said some time ago, I mean, it's deeply connected to the Venezuela work. Chavez was the leader among Latin American presidents to resist the free trade area of the Americas, which was an enormous push to basically create a NAFTA from the tip of the hemisphere to the bottom. And a lot of social movement organizing in the United States went a long way in stopping the free trade area of the Americas. And on the other side, a lot of resistance from governments that knew better, like Chavez's. So the free trade area of the Americas was an enormous arrangement of corporate power and of so-called free trade that we don't live under. And it goes back to some of these things that we're talking about. And we are still living in an era where even a supposed anti-globalist, quote-unquote anti-globalist President Donald Trump, even a President Donald Trump is asking other countries to hold his hand on trade agreements, and they still contain some of the same problematic corporation first, screw the people and the planet's understandings as free trade agreements have for the last 30 years. So we're still fighting that fight.
Thank you. I wanted to bring that in because sometimes, not always, but sometimes the call for international solidarity and solidarity forever and internationalism, just generally, it can sometimes sound rote and sloganeering, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not to say that like I reject those ideas, I embrace them wholeheartedly, but I just wish and hope that people can expand on those ideas in a way that's engaging, easy to understand, and convincing as well. And one of the ways that I think that that can be done is through understanding free trade agreements, that when we talk about corporate domination, when we talk about global capitalism, you can listen to Russell. Russell just explained it to you in 2 minutes, what that looked like. And that's why I wanted you to bring it in, because that is exactly what the Bolivarian Revolution is meant to resist.
Mm-hmm.
That is to say, this is colonialism by another name.
That's it.
And we won't have it because we've shaken off our colonial chains. Spain doesn't dominate us anymore. So let's act like we shook off the yoke of colonialism and not submit to it just because instead of it being a direct monarchy that we're resisting corporations, foreign corporations that are coming in to establish a new order. Let's resist that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I wanted to bring that in.
Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Perfectly said.
So if we can look forward, what is it that you want from listeners? Let's say ideally every listener who can hear my voice is on board and wants the U.S. hands off Venezuela, then what should they do?
Well, you know, one thing that addresses that is we, Candy told you the lineup of our great speakers from the rally that we were just at, like that couple hours ago. But the lineup of our speakers essentially was from our own like home organizers to this new entity called Hands Off Venezuela PDX. We platformed ourselves right at this first debut action, debut public event where we're coming out and saying we're putting Portland on the map to say no intervention in Venezuela. We platformed ourselves. But at a future event, it's our intent, and we'll see how it unfolds, and we'll see when we get that event on the calendar. At a future event, we want to be able to give the public an opportunity to listen to ways that the Venezuela issue connects to other areas of their concern.
Great.
How does it connect to the FBI and the Joint Terrorism Task Force, for instance? How does it connect to trade, as we addressed just a little bit? How does it connect to the petrodollar and to extractive industry and to climate change? How does it connect to Yemen and the other wars that the United States is supporting across the world? So we look forward to educating in that way. We look forward to kind of plucking other folks' interests based on the campaigns that they're already in, and fighting this thing together in all of its connections. And we know those connections are numerous. We know our grievances are a web. So we don't have a date, but this group, look out for our next announcement of how we're going to educate on that and unite the community on that. And hopefully we'll overflow a building, and we'll get bigger than we know what to do with.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Yeah, I think that the date tentatively is around the 1 month. It'll be around the 1 month anniversary of the coup. So the 1 month anniversary will be February 23rd. So we honor around that date.
Is that a date to look forward to? February 23rd.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so please like Hands Off Venezuela PDX on Facebook.
Yep.
Keep
do
you
that.
Abreast of what's going on.
Yep.
Okay. Great. I just also want to bring in one area that you missed was in a free media. People who listen to KBOO generally don't just listen to KBOO for the interviews or the music, but there's a spirit about KBOO being one of the only community radio stations left in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Most radio stations have been brought up or bought up by some conglomerate, you know, that merged with another one that was incorporated by another one, so that there are only a few in the country. Same with television.
Mm-hmm.
And KBOO breaks with that trend. And I think that's why many of our viewers actually tune in, because they feel like they're taking part in a project, and they're correct. And I want to end where I began in talking about the media in Venezuela, that they are so unapologetically racist that their ability to be able to represent is just not even within a realm of possibility. And a better Venezuela would be a Venezuela where people are able to express their ideas through media. And I think that's a wonderful thing to fight for. So KBOO listeners might want to think about supporting the fight against U.S. aggression against Venezuela in order to be able to establish, celebrate, and support independent media in Venezuela. And that's where we're going to leave it. So thank you so much both for being here. And the struggle continues. Let's go. This is Alyssa Pariah, your friendly neighborhood agitator. Thank you, and I'll speak to you all next week. Be safe. Good luck with the snowpocalypse.
That went fast. I can't believe it was an hour.
Yeah.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Oh,
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar in Portland. Underground hip-hop artist Serengeti, also known as Kenny Dennis, returns to Portland for one night only. Local artist Champion Loves You, Mosley Wata, and DJ Cars and Trains will also perform. Again, that's Serengeti at the Alleyway on Friday, February 15th from 7:30 to 11 p.m. at the Alleyway Bar, 2415 Northeast Alberta Street in Portland. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.